I was just a stubborn guy that was trying to change a little bit of the culture, and it just wasn't fitting the best. Now, we were very successful when we were there. The program. I sat him another play, and then he comes over. He's like, "Are you going to ever be late again?" He goes, "No, sir." We end up winning that game. I think it was 20-something to 15. So they never.
Welcome to Raw Mind Sports, where we dig into the minds of athletes and sports fanatics. I'm your host, Ryan Primetime Jones. If you have a love and passion for sports, then this is the show for you.
Welcome to Raw Mind Sports. This is your host, Ryan Primetime Jones. I'm here with David Wotekin of J.H. Rose out of Greenville, North Carolina. A phenomenal coach with a very power-octane offense, but he's probably humble about it. He'll say something else. I'm here to kind of get his mind on his lifestyle, his life, and also the players he has sent to the NFL, and also what made him decide to become a coach at a varsity level, and pretty much it. And also, for the viewers, you know, he's from Pennsylvania. Before he even says it, you know, he has on shorts and a shirt, and I'm out here. I'm freezing. I got on a peacoat. So that lets you know the toughness of this man here.
This is a good, crisp summer morning in Pennsylvania, this weather right here. So there's nothing to this.
So let's tell the viewers about your life and where you're from, all that good stuff.
Well, I grew up in Union City, Pennsylvania. It's a small town just outside of Erie, just off Lake Erie. Grew up, went to a small high school, probably, around 100 and some students in the school. I played football, track and field, wrestled a couple years, played basketball a couple years, played about everything you possibly could, had a great, great home life, mother and father in the home, was raised with a lot of discipline and I end up, earning a scholarship to play football in college. Actually was recruited as a defensive player, defensive nose guard, and kind of ate my way into the offensive line, like a lot of people do. Played offensive line at Glenville State College for a series of coaches. Rich Rodriguez was there right before I got there. Ron Crook, who coached at Stanford, tight ends coach at Stanford, coached at West Virginia, also played under – Rick Trickett, who was the offensive line coach at Florida State, and been around some good guys, and ended up my career. I wrapped up playing for a guy that coaches at Lafayette now. So I've been around a lot of good football coaches, and they actually asked me to come and be an assistant coach when I got done playing. So I coached two seasons as an offensive line coach in college. Before I had to make a decision to try to make some money or continue on making no money as a Division II football coach. So I pursued my teaching career and, ended up in Martin Middle School, Tarboro, North Carolina. And you talk about a culture shock at first, going from just the little town that I grew up north down south where, on my interview, I walked in and left my dad in the car, but it was like 110 degrees outside, and both the principals asked me about my family life. I said, "Oh, my father's in the car right now." And they're like, "Well, he's in the car. You need to bring him on inside. He'll end up passing out in the car." So I got my start there in a little gym that had no air conditioning.
Oh wow.
Probably still doesn't have air conditioning down there. But started there with Bo Robinson. It was him and I taught together, and I know the first year they made me the head football coach, head baseball coach, and head wrestling coach, and the athletic director.
Call a turnaround, right? That's a turnaround quick one.
So they threw all that on me real quick, and we did a great job. Won a conference championship in football, conference championship in baseball, conference championship in wrestling that year, and ended up getting called by Jeff Craddock to come up to the varsity and come up with a group of guys that were real good in middle school and kind of follow them, and didn't last so long in Tarboro. Lasted a couple years in Tarboro. They didn't have a PE position. I'm licensed in PE, so they kind of threw me around in special ed and some other stuff just to get me up there, and had to take a PE spot, so I moved to Virginia for about 5 years. Was a JV coach there, was told that nobody could win with the group of kids that they gave me, and we went 8-1.
Oh man.
So they end up asking me to be the head coach of the varsity there, a team that was 0-9 the year before. I think we won 3 games the first year, and second year we won 4 games, and then principal and I had a little falling out. So, and in that, my mother was diagnosed with cancer, so I didn't really want to be the head coach because I wanted to be able to leave whenever I had to go see her. And
right.
I knew myself, if I was the head coach, I wouldn't leave at all. I'd be there for the guys and do what I had to. So, J.H. Rose called me, the head coach called me and asked me if I was interested in coming down and becoming the offensive line coach. And that's kind of history now. And, coached 1 year as an assistant here. And then we had a coaching change, and I was asked if I wanted to be the interim head football coach, and kind of went from a 3-8 to 12-3 that first year. So they couldn't get rid of me. So, they had to keep hiring me back, and we kept on going pretty well. And now I think we're, as a staff here, since I've started as a head coach, we're 51-25. Hmm. So not bad, not great. It's not Jeff Craddock status, but we try to do the best we can.
So tell me about your mentality. You were just talking right then about your mom having cancer. You couldn't coach during that time frame, so you want to make sure you could be able to go back and forth. Did that kind of like put a strain, or what was your – mental awareness towards that? How did it make you stronger as well as now and back then?
Well, the biggest thing is, when anybody tells you they're diagnosed with cancer, the first thing in your mind is always negative. It's always comes to death. And and I knew that I put myself so much into what I'm doing football wise and school wise that if I continued to be the head coach, that it would affect how I did my job. So I went and, I went to the school in Virginia, said, look, I'm going to look for another job. I can't be the head coach anymore and those types of things, and got hired down here and explained the situation with my mother, and that it was that first year I was down here. I missed 2 games. The first game was in Wilmington. It was against New Hanover High School, and I couldn't go, but the whole time I'm on the phone with everybody trying to figure out what's going on. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, my mom ended up passing. And, I drove up there, spent 3 days, and all I want to do is get back and get back to, a normal life. You just want to forget about some stuff. And me working takes care of a lot of my worries and stresses. So, doing those things kind of helped me get through all that. And I just know what kind of person I was. I'm very passionate about what I'm doing. So I knew that I had to get back and get to coaching. And, every game is dedicated to my mother every time I coach now.
I think your mother pretty much would have probably told you this is your gift and calling. God put you here, so you need to have your focus here as well as while she was going through that. That had to be tough, because a lot of people wouldn't be able to endure that and be able to still kind of focus on everyday life, knowing that your mother was probably – wouldn't take it back. Your mother was your everything, so,
Well, and it's my mother and father never missed a game that I had or played in. So through high school, college, even coaching, starting coaching, they were at every game. Mm. So, they were very wrapped up into all that as well. And even when my mother was in the hospital the first time I went home, she was angry because I left and came up to see her. So she knew how much, those things meant to me. And she didn't want me to kind of put my life on hold because of that situation. But at that time you don't understand those things when people are saying that to you, but she knew that's I dealt with things a little differently than most people do.
Wow. Let's talk about your offense. I mean, the offense you ran for J.H. Rose, and when they first hired you, what was your interview like, and also what did you tell them before you came? Because a lot of teams in this area, From what I'm understanding, what I see, don't like to throw the ball.
Right.
So, how did that interview come off kind of differently?
Well, first of all, I never even went over to the school. it was a straight football hire, and and that's pretty cool. But you don't have that very often. So I didn't even interview for a PE position. They were told like, this guy's going to teach PE. This is going to be our coach. But, myself and the roommate I had in college, we've coached together for a few years, and both of us are spread guys. He was a Tony Franklin system guy, and I was a mixture of a lot of things that worked for what I like to do. people always mistaken the spread for a finesse type of offense. And I always try to make sure that they understand that it's still a power run offense. We're just trying to take people out of the box
right.
to be able to run against less people. So when people say you run the spread, oh, you throw the ball all the time. We don't throw the ball all the time.
Right,
we're 50-50 most of the time, but we're going to take what you give us. If you're going to let us throw the ball, we're going to throw the ball.
Right.
So I always tell people we throw the ball for a living. We don't throw it for a hobby. and people are like, what's that supposed to mean? If you watch a lot of offenses that are not a passing style of offense, every route is deep, where we're a lot of timing. A lot of in space, those types of things. So when we interviewed, it was hard to explain what we wanted to do to the coaches that were here because they've never had that offense. They used to run the option and I formation and things like that here at Rose, and very successful now, 4 straight state championships.
Yeah, yeah.
They were good at it, and they had some studs that were good at it. And they just didn't have those kids anymore, those right. style of kids. But we had – basketball players and kids that could run, and now you tell a kid, look, you're gonna catch about 7-8 balls a game, be able to score touchdowns, things that way, you get more people out.
Right.
So from my first year, our numbers were not that good. I think we had 70 in the program. Then my first year as the head coach, we ended up 130 in the program.
Hmm.
Just because it's a little more exciting, you're getting the ball to people, more people are getting involved, and the kids seem to like it a lot. And it's up-tempo, and you're running a lot. So it reminds you of, like, a basketball game because it's so fast. And, you know, explaining that, we had to show a lot of film to the coaches. And, you know, they kind of bought in. And you had to buy in the no huddle as a whole program. You can't just, our offense is no huddle. Now your whole program's got to be no huddle.
Right.
So our secretaries have to be no huddle. you know, our defense has to be no huddle. Our special team, everything's got to be fast now and things that way. So it's a whole culture change when you buy into that type of system.
So my understanding, you say Rich Rodriguez was one of your coaches. Can you kind of dive into that?
Well, Rich Rodriguez was there when I was starting to, when I was being recruited to go play there. And then he ended up leaving, and I think he went to WU at that time or Clemson at that time.
Okay.
So, you know, but he was still a huge influence on the offense and the culture of Glenville State at that time. And then we got in, actually the offensive coordinator that is at Wake Forest was the head coach.
Okay.
And the offensive line coach that I had, Ron Crook, who's now at Cincinnati right now. He's a coach there, but has coached at several places. But all that kind of stayed there, and the systems kind of stayed, and the no huddle and the hurry up and memorizing a 200-play wristband and all those types of things. that all started there.
Man, you sound like you was around a lot of football minds.
Definitely was. And there's a lot of great coaches went through small colleges in West Virginia. You look at Jimbo Fisher. He was at Salem University that was in West Virginia, and Nick Saban came from West Virginia. So a lot of great coaches came from that area.
Let's talk about the time you was at Tarver for a little bit, and what was that experience, and what did that make you? Did it make you a better coach or better in a certain area? Or
well, it definitely makes you a better coach because you're doing things outside of your comfort zone. You know, Tarver's run the Tarboro T since the school has been founded.
yeah.
And, you know, I was not that style of coach, even, you know, coming up playing in different systems. You know, I wanted to kind of try to do some things differently, and you don't do that at Tarboro. You do exactly what they've been doing for a long time. And people understand that, and people know that. And, you know, I was just a stubborn guy that was trying to change a little bit of the culture. And it just wasn't fitting the best. Now, we were very successful when we were there. You know, the program started getting turned around. You know, Jeff decided to hire me and let me call plays. And, you know, that was a big change because I never really understood that type of offense. And it took me a while to get used to it. And Ken Cox used to get on me all the time.
I can imagine that.
About throwing quickie pass and I got to motion certain guys to be able to throw the quickie pass. So, you know, he was a great guy, a good mentor yeah. for me. Same with Don Reams. You know, I learned a lot from Don Reams. Don Reams is probably one of the one of the best coaches I've been around. And, you know, he probably doesn't think that I think that about him. But, you know, both those guys were huge influences on the way that I do things. And Jeff especially, you know, Jeff, as a young coach, you know, I was a negative guy. I was like, why can't they do these things type of guy? Because, you know, I played collegiate football. I could do some certain things. But your guys can never, like Jeff said, they're not you. So, you know, that always stuck with me about, look, these guys are not going to be you when they line up. So I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot about power run. I actually used a little bit of the Tarboro T in Virginia on some short yardage stuff, and people were like, what the heck is this stuff? But it was fun. I learned quite a bit there. A lot of great athletes. And I talked to you a little earlier about the work ethic those kids had. Compared to some other kids I've been around, that's probably the hardest working group of young men I've ever been around. And, you know, it showed, you know, 3 or 4 state championships and a lot of kids winning track state championships and wrestling state championships. And, you know, they're just a bunch of really good kids. And the teachers that were in that school at that time really cared about the students. And I don't know how it is anymore since I haven't been there, but at that time you could tell that the teachers loved the kids that were there.
Right. Let's talk about your program now and talk about the kid that you sent to Clemson. I let you say his name, man. I know you say you started him as a freshman at wideout or in the slot. When did you know that kid was that it kid?
Well, so his freshman year, I was was an assistant. So I think the first time the it hit us was we were at a 7-on-7 at Washington. So we were 7-on-7 Washington, and Havelock was there. And, you know, he was a scrawny little freshman. I mean, like, for a freshman, he's a good-sized kid. But he was scrawny then compared to what he is right now. So he goes out, and they had him a quarterback. So he kind of moves out of the pocket and just lets a bomb go. I was like, well, shoot, that's pretty impressive right there. Let's put him out wide out and see what he does. So we put him out wide out, and he makes just an amazing catch over a kid that was an all-state DB for Havelock. And the whole time, I'm like, I don't know. This kid might be a wide out. He might not be a quarterback, guys.
Tough.
Yeah, and, you know, and he's been a quarterback his whole youth league, his middle school, all that. And I tell you what, I used to get calls all the time about, why is he not a quarterback? Why is he not a quarterback? He needs to be your quarterback. I was like, well, let's just see how this kind of pans out. You know, Cornell Powell plays wide receiver for Clemson now.
Yeah.
So I think he did all right. Moving him. But, you know, his sophomore year, I became the head coach. And him and I butted heads now. He was a kid that was always told how great he was.
Oh.
He didn't have to work for anything, those types of things. And I am the total opposite of
right.
that. If you're good, I'm harder on you
right.
than what I am a lot of the guys. Because some guys just don't have the talent, and they're giving everything you got. But some have it and don't use all of it. So him and I butted heads quite a bit. We butted heads until probably the summer of a senior year. Then all of a sudden, you know, him and I are traveling all over the place to Nike Elite camps and all this, and we really bonded a lot. And, you know, now we talk every week still, and just to make sure how things are going. But I've never seen a kid make plays like he did. It'd be third and it didn't matter, 3rd and 5 to 3rd and 45, just throwing the ball, and he's gonna come down with it somehow. And it was real hard. One game we were in the playoffs, it was right before the regional championship. We were playing Hogger, and he was late for practice the day before, so I sat him for a quarter.
Oh, boy.
And he's just sitting there, and we go down 15-0 in this game. And I was like, oh, Lord. So on the headphones, none of the kids know it, but on the headphones, I was like, guys, we got to figure out how we're going to collect all the stuff when we get back and all this kind of stuff. And he's just over there just adjusting his gloves, waiting to go in. And I said he'd sit one quarter. And I was like, well, I'm gonna kind of be mean to him, so I'm going to sit him for a play in the second quarter. So he's just looking at me. You want me to go in? So I sat him another play. And then he comes over. He's like, are you going to ever be late again? He goes, no, sir. So I said, you're not going to get the ball. And he kind of looked at me. So I sent him in, and I went to our offensive coach, like, throw him the ball. So the first play, we throw him the ball, touchdown.
Oh, man.
We end up winning that game. I think it was 20-something to 15. So they never scored again and end up winning. And, you know, he's just a game changer. The next year as a junior, he scores 5 touchdowns in the first playoff game against Pine Forest and racks up 400-some yards on his own. The week later, there was LSU's coach and Ole Miss's coach were there to watch the kid that we have playing in the NFL now, Kentavious Streif.
Yeah.
So they're like, look, bud, if you can play that type of game next week, you know, we'll offer you a scholarship. He goes, look, I'm going to have 6 touchdowns next week. And he did.
He caught
6 touchdowns, and they both teams offered him on the spot. LSU and Ole Miss offered him right there on the spot. And, you know, he just – his senior year, he went on and was all-state player and went to the Shrine Bowl and should have been the Shrine Bowl MVP. He returned a kickoff for a touchdown, and he caught 2 or 3 other touchdowns in the Shrine Bowl game. But he's an amazing competitor, and he's a good kid. He's a humble kid and a great kid to be around when he's back here.
Man, that took guts. Like, most coaches would not be able to say when people are telling you, he's a quarterback, and then you say, no. I don't know, God must have sent that to you or something and said, look, no, this kid's a receiver. For you, for what you just said, he threw a deep bomb, perfect bomb, but then you said, let's move him to wide receiver.
Mm.
You must have had a good instinct on this kid at wide receiver. That was like a angle. That's not lucky, but I'm just saying, like, most coaches wouldn't make that call.
With what we do, you know, we like to get the kids the ball in space and let them make plays. He was the type of kid that when he caught the ball, he wasn't trying to make the first guy missed, he was setting up the second and third guy to go around, and it was amazing. That's why he's so good on kickoff return and punt return, that, you know, he would set up this things later down the line. And, you know, I kind of saw that, and he wasn't so accurate short. He could throw it a mile, but he wasn't so accurate short. Okay. And with what we do, you know, we're throwing a ball between 3 to 15 yards.
Okay.
And that worked for us, and he was not so accurate doing that.
Okay, I got you.
But if we did throw it to him, he's going to catch it no matter what's going on.
So what played into his decision to go to Clemson? You say LSU offered him an Ole Miss. What did y'all have a conversation on where you want to go, or what was this more of his decision?
Well, we talked a lot. You know, him and I talked a lot about State and Carolina, about how he could probably go there and be an All-American and really shine there. I said that Clemson, you might have to wait your turn and all those types of things. But he said, I'm willing to work for it down there. So I was fine with his decision to go there. And, you know, he wanted to go to wide receiver university. So, and he's done a fairly decent job there. You know, I still think that if he was at Carolina or State, you know, he'd be yeah. all that right now.
Right.
And it'd be easier to go watch every game.
Right, right.
So it was kind of selfish on my part to try to push him to the Carolina and State because I wanted to go watch every week.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's happy with his decision. You know, he's doing a good job at the university. And, you know, as long as he's happy, you know, we'll support him no matter what goes on.
So what are your ambitions or your next goals for J.H. Rose right now, in season now, and for the next future years?
Well, we always have a goal on Thanksgiving breakfast together. So since I've been here, that's what we talk about.
Oh, y'all have Thanksgiving breakfast?
Yeah, so we have
you
practice.
You feed the kids?
Yes.
Oh, man.
We feed them all the time. So our big thing is we want to be, you know, third, fourth round playoffs every single year. And then, you know, maybe all of a sudden you pop up in the state championship. Because it's hard to repeat all, you know, state championship all every year. But, you know, we should be a second, third, and fourth round type team every year. And if we're eating breakfast with each other on that Thanksgiving day, then we're a game away from the regional championship.
Oh, man.
So that's our huge goal is that every year. And, you know, we got to the state championship a few years ago, and I'd like to experience that again because you don't really get to enjoy it your first time. It's just
right.
So stressful, so much stuff going on, and the time frames are all messed up. So, you know, I'd love to be able to take our program to that point again and you know, try to get one. We haven't won a state championship since 2006 is our last one we've had, that year, or the run of 4 straight. So it'd be nice to get back to those types of games.
So I know earlier in this discussion, we were talking about some of the coaches you had that coached you. I want to ask you a question. Who is a coach that you look up to or look at to when it comes to your offense, to your team, and you kind of go by some of their guidelines, not all of their guidelines or their strategies, but strategically, who is the coach you like to look at a lot of?
That's kind of tough strategically. Now, a lot of what we do is a Rich Rodriguez type of stuff. So, you know, Rich liked to spread things out and just power run you or run you with the quarterback and do a lot of misdirection. So a lot of what I like to do is from that. But there's a lot of good guys out there right now that are doing a great job of offenses in college. Of course, you know, at Clemson, they do a great job with what they're doing and the type of talent they have. And we're very similar talent-wise to what they have with really good wideouts and good backs and, you know, getting the ball to them in space and letting them just work. So we get a lot off of that, a lot off of Oklahoma. When Lincoln Riley was here at East Carolina, you know, we would meet with him a lot. Even when I was in Virginia, I took a trip to Texas Tech, and he was the quarterback coach down there, and learned a lot from Mike Leach and that staff. I spent a week down there with that group, and so a lot of the stuff comes from that. So, you know, the spread community is, you know, everybody kind of stealing a little bit from each other and kind of trying to make it work to your type of athletes that you have.
Thank you for telling me, reminding me here on Raw Mind Sports. Now I see the connection with Ruffin and Riley. ECU. Got it. That's why I was so easy.
Yeah, so Ruffin was the defensive coordinator, and Lincoln was the quarterback coach when they were at Texas Tech. So that's where that all kind of started. And then Ruffin got the job here and brought Lincoln here, and now it's switched the other way. Lincoln goes to Oklahoma and brings Ruffin with him.
Do you have your guys, like, since you run a high-octane offense or a fast-paced offense, no huddle, do you have them – particularly during the season, like eating certain stuff, or feel like you kind of recommend that to them?
Well, we try to pump chocolate milk down them as much as possible. You know, every time we get done lifting, you know, the creamery here in town, you know, there's some of the best milk you can get. But we try to get them to drink that milk after we get done with workouts, but nothing really in particular. We just try to make sure they're eating. You know, a lot of these kids go all day long and don't hardly eat anything. When they come in here, we always have things for them, macaroni and cheese and some different stuff for them to be able to eat at times, just to make sure that they're got some fuel in their body, because when it's time to hit practice, it's time to move a little bit.
Yeah. What's a quote or favorite quote that Coach Wotekin tells his kids, his football team? I'm pretty sure it's something you tell them all the time. That they used to saying or hearing.
Oh, man. The biggest thing is that we tell the guys, it's hard to tell. I say a lot of off-the-wall things now. I'm always going to give you everything I got, so I expect all that back. So I'm going to give you everything, you give me everything. And we do those things where you're normally going to be successful. And the guys have bought into that. And I say some other things now. God knows what I say. I try to keep them on their toes all the time, mess with them, and try to be silly and stuff like that. But that's one thing that we always kind of harp on, those types of things.
And my clues to the Raw Mind Sports here with Coach Dave Wotekin, the one word for him is focus. No matter what he's doing, even through his mom, his situation, his journey through his mom and cancer, focus, focus, focus. No matter what you do in life, you got to stay focused on whatever it is, basketball, golf, whatever. His drive, his mindset on how he has his pursuit to win, it's focus. It's just focus. Focus, focus, focus. With that being said, Coach Wotekin, I appreciate you, man. Can't wait to see you guys in the playoffs and bring a state championship back to Pitt County or Jay's Road.
Yes, sir.
That's all for us today. You guys have a great day, great night, great afternoon, whatever time you're watching this episode.